29. My emotional gut says to start throwing punches and wait until Minuteman regains consciousness to ask questions. But my logical mind keeps me rooted in the doorway. Minuteman's presence irks me for a number of reasons, but at some point in the future, Cassie decided to trust him, to fight alongside him. At the very least, I'm going to find out why before slugging him. When the room's two occupants see me standing there, I'm surprised to see relief in their eyes, including Minuteman's. Then there's a flash of recognition, followed by disappointment. I'm not who they were hoping for. "We don't have time for your bullshit," Minuteman says, his mood souring as I step further into the room. I pull a chair out from under a desk, spin it around, and take a seat. Afraid I must insist. When Cassie enters behind me, Minuteman's eyes light up again. Langdon stands to greet her. While my interactions with the boss have been positive, they've been few and far between. To hear Cassie tell it, she and Langdon have had a few long conversations about a mutual hobby, crocheting of all things. "Hey," I whisper to Minuteman while Cassie greets Langdon. "That's not her." "You saw her? The others?" "Four of them," I say, glancing at Cassie to make sure she's still engaged. "They didn't make it." "How?" The question comes out as an emotion-fueled grunt. He is barely holding himself together at the news, which means he cares about his people. "Minigun didn't stand a chance."
"You were there?"
"Nearby." "You see what we're up against now?" he asks. I give a nod. "You should have told me you were from the future, that my time wasn't the first jump."
"Didn't know if I could trust you," he says. "You're a good company man, remember?"
I angle my head toward Langdon. "Hasn't stopped you all from becoming pals."
"He was part of the plan. You're a wild card."
He leans closer, speaking in low tones.
"How would you have reacted if we just approached you after that first jump back in time?"
"Before or after my truck exploded?"
"That was for your own good. You were trying to protect me."
I nearly laugh at the idea.
"Look."
He takes a moment to gather himself.
"We need to stop measuring dicks, okay? You're here, you look like you're ready to do something stupid, and I'd rather we operate on the same team. So full disclosure."
He leans back and raises his voice.
"Cards on the table time for both of you."
Cassie is a little thrown by her inclusion in the statement.
"How about all three of us?"
Kuzneski says, closing the door. Minuteman looks ready to argue, but gives in without a fight. He's weary and dressed in 1920s clothing, not much better than rags, looking more than a little bedraggled.
"I'll tell her,"
I say, holding out a hand.
"Tell me what?"
Cassie asks.
"What's your real name?"
I ask Minuteman.
I can tell he's not accustomed to answering questions while being held prisoner. Like me, his training is to resist questioning, but he's not being interrogated.
I'm simply asking for his trust, as I'm sure he will soon do of me.
"David," he says. "Sergeant David Flores, U.S. Army Ranger, retired."
He holds my gaze for a moment, knows what that means to me. We're both special forces, and while we never serve together, there is an unspoken bond of having fought and bled for the same team. I don't have to like him, but I will respect him for his service. I turn back to Cassie. "Flores is from the future, which is where all this started. Our time was the second flux. It was his people who blew up my truck to keep me out of the way and keep you alive," Flores says. His statement trips up my flow for a moment, but I press on, focusing on explaining to Cassie and Kuzneski, who's now leaning against the door, arms crossed. "He's part of a team that came here to stop what's happening," he says.
"Screwed the pooch on that one," Kuzneski mutters.
"I found the other four members of his team on the mountainside, all of them dead." The news deflates Langdon.
"I'm sorry about that,"
Cassie says to Flores and then to me. "But what does that have to do with..." "You're one of them," I tell her. "Your future self was here, was part of his team." When I look into Cassie's stunned eyes, I see a flash of her dead-eyed stare, face covered in blood.
"I thought..."
I shake my head and sigh.
"I thought it was you."
"But it will be me?"
Cassie asks.
"How long from now?"
7 years, I say. I turn to Minuteman for confirmation, and he nods.
"The odds against your fate repeating are astronomical," Langdon says, taking hold of Cassie's hand.
"How can the instrument of all this pain and suffering be the kind man comforting my friend?"
Death transforms the living. I know that firsthand. Perhaps he is even more unprepared for it than I was at 11.
If the timeline continued on course, your future self would know to avoid the situation that led to your death, but I do not think that will be an issue. With each leap back, we're tearing away layers of space-time, taking people in places, like lint on a piece of tape. Every stop picks up a little bit more, though not everything. But we're not lifting the lint away, we're lifting a copy of it, creating new timelines, new dimensions of reality.
Then what? Kuzneski asks.
We're not real?
As real as any dimension, we're simply experiencing the moment of dimensional split in a way our senses can perceive. According to the many worlds interpretation, every decision we make creates a myriad of alternate dimensions where we make different choices. The result is an infinite number of dimensions where anything is possible. For us, it's more visceral as we're not just peeling away from our former lives, but also back in time, picking up more and more lint as we go. That is, if Mr. Flores's description of what's happening beyond these walls is accurate.
It is, I say.
So we're living in a big Schrodinger synergy? Kuzneski says. Dead and alive at the same time, except some of us are alive twice and some of us are dead once.
He looks at Cassie.
Sorry.
First, Flores says, I'm impressed you know that. Didn't think you were that smart. Kuzneski offers a fake smile and middle finger.
Don't be a dick. I'm not that guy out there.
Second, some of us are alive three times. Flores looks at Langdon to explain.
We believe the effects are far-reaching.
Beyond synergy? I ask.
The facility stretches far beyond the mountain,
Langdon says. I grip the back of the chair, taking out my frustration on the hardwood.
Why didn't I know that?
Your job was to protect our people from harm and everything within our perimeter. The rest of the facility is underground.
I remember the large pipe running through the Indian graveyard and the road work completed near my house.
The tunnels leading down the mountainside.
He nods, but I can tell there's more.
What is this place?
A particle collider, he says. The largest in the world, built under the mountain.
And under Black Creek, I guess, and I don't wait for confirmation.
Which means there are layers of town and all the people in it from multiple time periods. That could be thousands of people, many of them armed and all of them terrified.
I can't help but picture a bloodbath. Then I fixate on one possibility. One person cast through time who means everything to me and to Owen. I turn to Cassie.
Three lives. You were in town the day before my father died. We had planned to meet after church, but my father took me hunting.
Her eyes widen.
I was shoe shopping with my mother.
I tried to figure out a way to reach town and save young Cassie, as much for myself as for Owen and my Cassie. But saving them won't be possible as long as we're being catapulted through time. And that's not going to stop until all of my questions have been answered, starting with,
three lives, I say to Flores.
You weren't talking about Cassie.
He shakes his head.
I was talking about the man who brought us here, about the man who inspired us to risk everything, to fight against a lunatic whose actions could destroy the universe.
He looks at our Langdon.
Sorry.
Then back to me.
The man who knew this mountain better than anyone, who loved this town and the people in it, who Cassie would do anything for, including die.
He leans forward, eyes intense.
I was talking about you,